afternoon, everyone. I am Julie Haskell. I lead Global Inclusion and Diversity at State Street, and we are so proud to welcome you all here today. This is our 10th year serving as the presenting sponsor for this phenomenal conference that we're able to share with you each year, and we also share it with 1,500 of our employees. So if you haven't met a State Streeter, raise your hand in the room, please. There better be a lot of you. This is such a wonderful time. I've also had the privilege to come to this conference every year since its inception, which was 11 years ago. Was there anyone here who was here 11 years ago? Okay, so do you remember Maya Angelou? When I heard Maya Angelou speak for the first time, I knew that I was in for something special, and that is why this conference has been so near and dear to my heart every year. One of the things that's interesting about the conference is that you learn so much. Every year it's more and more inspirational, it's more and more educational, it's more and more just phenomenal. But I have to tell you, by 3 o'clock this day, it's also a little overwhelming. Let's be honest, because by now you know when you leave this room, you have to be ready to own your career. You have to be making sure you're not pandering to that imposter syndrome. You have to be ready to amplify your voice. You have to find balance. You have to stand out, but you want to stand out while you're stepping up. But I also forgot to remind you, you need to be ready to impact social change. And then when you leave too, which is the easiest one for me, you've got to be ready to embrace your messy life. So every year when I drive home, I think, I love this, it's amazing, I want to do so much, but how can I do this and stay true to the person I am? There's a lot going on in my life. Not only am I a professional woman and a manager, I also am a mother and a wife. I find myself being, sadly and also enthusiastically, a cancer survivor. I newly discovered that I have a passion for hot yoga that I share with my niece, and her mom is in the room today. I also am going to admit to you all today that I am a closet Disney freak, and on Sunday, my husband and I decided that we were going to share all 4 parks in one day. So we got up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and we started at Disney MGM Studios, or Hollywood Studios, and we finished at 9 o'clock in Epcot, and that was something we had said we wanted to do. The other thing, too, I also will admit, and I did check to make sure someone else knew this show, a lot of times, besides being all that, I want to be a person who just wants to binge watch Outlander on Stars. So now, if you haven't watched Outlander, you might want to go take a peek at that show. So from all that emerged the idea for this session. And I am joined by 2 amazing colleagues at State Street who are going to share their thoughts, because I have learned directly from them that it is possible to be true to who you are, share your story, have the career that you want to have, and stay true to your own story. They are Catherine Lucas and Joe Cowan. As TED speakers, as you read in the program, they have literally had millions of people view their stories. As Joe said to me, well, it's really only a little bit over 2 million. So I can guarantee you, when you hear from them, you will completely understand why TED says that their TED Talks are ideas worth sharing, because Joe's and Catherine's ideas are completely worth sharing. So with no further ado, I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves. But because at State Street, we always like a challenge, I'm not allowing them to say anything about themselves that is in the bio that you can read in the program. I'd like them to tell you who they truly are in their own words. Joe, why don't you go?
Yours will probably be more interesting than mine.
Yeah, so I did prepare for this a little bit because I knew I would not be able to do this on the spot. But Julie asked us to introduce ourselves by sharing 3 things about ourselves that might not be, as she said, available in the bio. So the first thing is, I think my bio says that I'm a musician, but it doesn't say anything about the songs I have. And I have a song that I wrote about Bigfoot, which is kind of a folk hip-hop song, I guess you'd call it. And I sent it to the show Finding Bigfoot. And in 2013, after going back and forth with the producer for a while, they invited me down to New Jersey to film an episode of Finding Bigfoot. So we went down there. It was like in the woods, and there was a campfire, and the Bigfoot guys, and an author, and I had a couple of friends with me, and like a 20-person film crew, and we just played our song, and then they did not air it, but it was super cool, and we met Renee Holland, the skeptic scientist, and we just hung out by the campfire. So that's one thing. The second thing is I went to college twice, but not the way normal people do, where you get a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. I got a bachelor's degree in psychology, and then so that prepared me for my first real big job, waiting tables at Pizzeria Uno. And 5 years later, I decided to go back and get a second bachelor's degree in fine art. So I guess that's the second thing. And the third thing is, right after I did get that art degree, I worked at a scenic shop in Dedham, Massachusetts, where we built scenery for theater and trade show booths. It was like a shop building stuff. And they got the contract to build the theater on board of the Disney Magic. So we went to Venice, to a shipyard, Fincantieri, right outside of Venice. And we were working 12-hour shifts, 12 to 12, but not the good 12 to 12. It was the 12 midnight to 12 noon. And we were there for 3 months. It was horrible. But I made enough overtime to pay off my student loans. So that's
it. I knew I should have gone first. Mine are so boring compared to that. So the first one, I have two beautiful little babies, an English bulldog named Blitz, and a little Yorkshire Terrier named Sophie. I'm a big dog person. I'm the second one, I guess, is I'm soon to be expecting a third little baby, an actual real baby this time. So my husband and I just found out we're expecting. It's a little boy, so he's not going to be able to come to this. And third, in this one, I would be shocked if you can guess, although you might have been able, you might be able to guess now because I've gained a lot of weight, but I actually hold a varsity letter in men's football from a Division I university. I'm the only woman in that university's history to ever have earned a varsity letter in men's football. Thank you. It was great for my father. I'm an only child, and really, he didn't have a whole lot of interests with me, so he would tell his golf buddies, like, well, actually, Catherine, you're just on the men's football team. Very progressive team, very progressive. So.
That's badass.
It is kind of badass, yeah.
Thank you. So I had actually learned this tip of introducing folks at the Pennsylvania Conference for last year, and I realized you now know more about these folks than you possibly could know by reading five lines in an agenda. And so it's really important, I think, as we all talk about ourselves, that we're able to share not just what's the words of who you are as a professional, but really who you are as a person. I now also know that Joe and I lived directly across the street from that scenic place in Dedham, so we'll have to talk more on East Street in Dedham. But let me spend, I just want to have you, these are not their full TED Talks, but I can't, once you're done seeing these snippets, you're actually going to want to go and search TED for them to watch the whole show. But for we're going to show just snippets of them.
Her cheerfulness belies her intelligence and her seniority. This is the feedback I received about 7 months ago from a 360 feedback survey that has, quite frankly, driven me almost completely crazy. Was I being criticized for being an extrovert? It's the thing I like best about myself. But it seemed that what I thought was my best attribute, what was actually my biggest deficit. And I can tell you, I immediately began to eliminate all cheerfulness from my repertoire. Gone were the days of smiles, laughs, colorful dresses, meetings that were once welcomed as open, safe, and collaborative places to discuss everything from work to personal issues were now agenda-driven reporting sessions. Ah, I replied, this is my new approach. It's based on feedback that I've received that I really needed to dial it down a bit and be less overwhelming and outgoing. We need to use the amazing resources that we have to figure out how to work together. Because let me tell you, I don't think that we can succeed with one personality type winning out over another or dominating an organization. It's the interaction, the intersection of those beautiful personality types. And from that diversity of personalities that's here and that's everywhere at work, that we will have such a powerful result. Diversity of thought. Thank you so very much.
Okay, I have stage fright. I've always had stage fright, and not just a little bit.
It's a big bit. I had all these stories and ideas, and I wanted to share them with people, but physiologically, I couldn't do it. I had this irrational fear. Now, when you experience fear, your sympathetic nervous system kicks in. So you have a rush of adrenaline. Your heart rate increases, your breathing gets faster. Next, your non-essential systems start to shut down, like digestion. I mean, your nervous system is an idiot. Really, 200,000 years of human evolution, and it still can't tell the difference between a saber-toothed tiger and 20 folk singers on a Tuesday night open mic? I have never been more terrified until now. That night, I promised myself I would go back every week until I wasn't nervous anymore. And I did. I went back every single week. And sure enough, week after week, it didn't get any better. The same thing happened every week. I couldn't shake it. By thinking about my audience, by embracing and exploiting my problem, I was able to take something that was blocking my progress and turn it into something that was essential for my success.
As you can imagine, getting to know these folks has been truly inspirational to me, and I thought, what a great opportunity to share with their wisdom and wit, which is so important, with the rest of the audience at the Mass Conference. So we're going to start off really with storytelling, because I, as the sessions that I went to today, I heard a lot about the power of storytelling. But I also wonder, so I said to them, you're great storytellers. How did you get there? And can you give us some do's and maybe some do nots? Because there are some pitfalls I know that we fall into that maybe you can prevent us from falling into in the future.
Oh, I can definitely start because I did just about every do not or how not to get your story out there and kind of be comfortable with your situation that you can think of. What really ended up happening for me when I got that feedback is I found myself just whomping on to anyone who would listen about, you know, this injustice that had been levied against me. And it was just babble, babble, babble until, you know, my husband pointed out that I was trying to sound a little crazy. And, you know, finally, this really lovely colleague of mine, she's based up in one of our offices in Toronto, she finally pointed out to me that maybe what I was doing was a little career limiting, and maybe I kind of needed to stop and figure out a more constructive way of telling my story and really kind of framing my story as well. And she suggested, she said, you know, every day I go into work and I watch one TED Talk. She said, I figure out a TED Talk. She said, I love the partnership that State Street has with TED. She said, you should submit for a TED Talk. I said, yeah, okay. And she said, no, do it. And I said, okay. And I don't know if anyone's ever submitted for a TED Talk before, but it's this really kind of elaborate process where you really have to craft the story in advance. And so I went through and I was writing the story, and I found it really kind of cathartic and really therapeutic. And the story really changed a little bit on what I was thinking and what I was saying. And then lo and behold, I was selected, and I kind of had a small emotional upheaval because I was like, oh my God, no one actually wants to hear this story. And, you know, from working and from crafting and creating this story, it became less of an event and more of a tool for me to figure out how to interact with people and how to tell my story. But it also became, shockingly to me, useful to other folks. It never occurred to me that other people were in the same situation and that maybe my experiences and my story would actually be useful to them. And it became really, really apparent following the event that it could be useful and it could be helpful. And there was something better out there than me just constantly complaining. And I think my husband was really thrilled by that.
So just before Joe goes, to give you an idea of the impact, Kath and I actually didn't know each other, but I had seen her do her presentation. And I think I ran into a couple, you were in the cafeteria, and ended up saying, you're not going to believe this, but a very similar thing happened to me where someone had given me feedback about something in a 360, and I had no idea what to do with it. So I had done exactly what Catherine had done before listening to her, which is I had just muddled over it and was so sad and thinking, how can I fix this? How can I do that? And then I realized, wow, that was an empowering opportunity for me to say, you know what, I'm proud of who I am as a person. And if you see that as a flaw, then let's talk about that, because I see it as an asset. And then having those type of conversations was so empowering to me. I really think it changed the way I acted as a manager and a leader. So if you think about that, just this is one, when I talked to you about this particular panel, I said, you don't understand, you don't know me that well, but you really changed the way I think about myself. And I thought, and as did you, because I too share as a nerves as part of my public speaking array.
Yeah, me too. No, I mean, I feel the same way in that sense that, you know, so many people picked up the TED Talk afterwards and posted it on their blog as, you know, every website now is a list. It's like 10 things to get you through this, 10 things that say this. I mean, everything's 10 things or 5 things or name a number, and that's how many things it is. But so many people just put that, my talk on there, how to deal with your nerves and how to deal with stage fright, that it was just fascinating to look through all the different people and organizations who are like, hey, here's a good idea. But, you know, in terms of telling your own story at work, which is something that we've been talking a lot about lately, you know, how much of work is your work self and how much of work is your home self. Something really interesting happened to me last night, which was I had this strange realization watching Catherine's talk, because right in the beginning you say, I'm an extrovert, it's the part of myself that I love the most. And, you know, in my mind I'm like, right, and I'm an introvert, and I cherish that, you know. But, and then I started to think about it, and I was like, oh, I'm an introvert, wait a second. Am I an introvert, or am I a shy extrovert? And I was like, well, okay, is that the same thing? And so, you know, I went to the authority on who would know that, Google, and I said, you know, I typed in shy extrovert, and all these things came up. They're like, how do you know if you're an introvert versus a shy extrovert? And I think I might be a shy extrovert, and because it was just last night, I haven't, like, memorized all the things, but I went through, like, this whole list of things, and I was like, yep. And I was like, whoa, I really am an extrovert, but not really, because I'm shy. So, and like, when it comes to telling my personal story at work, I feel like when I did this TED Talk, that was one of the first times that I really sort of allowed my home world into work. And as a shy extrovert, which is a thing, you know, I'm not someone who really talks about, like, I love when people realize what I do, but I'm not someone to go up to someone and be like, hey, I wrote the song about Bigfoot, you should listen to it. I'm more likely to be like, oh, yeah, I mean, maybe I wrote a song, I don't know. So I'm just shy about that kind of thing. So I'm not someone to really, I'm not sure I really use storytelling that much to get my message out about me at work until TED. But as a songwriter, I'm constantly using storytelling, you know, and what I find is, It's very much of a crafting and iterative process for me that I'm telling a story and I'm refining it and I'm listening to it and listening to myself say it and changing it and editing and changing and editing until I have the message exactly the way I want it. And whether that's the approach that I would take to tell my story at work, I guess I'm not sure.
So not a question that I gave you in advance, so apologies right now, but as I'm listening to you and thinking about the value of listening to them for each one of us in the room, how do you think your career and your and just yourself has changed as a result of being who you are and really being able to get to know people at a different level in the workplace?
Sheesh. Do you want to take that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's great. I mean, I think, you know, it's so easy to just look out and see everyone as sort of just one worker bee in a hive of bees. But as soon as you start to know things about people, they start to become dimensional and you start to have more connections. And so the more I can talk about myself with other people and listen to what other people are saying about themselves, the more connected I feel, and the more connected I feel to other people at work, the better our relationship is and the better we work together. And it just sort of spirals from there. So I think, is that the question?
Yeah.
It's tough, though, right? Because you know, I mean, I tend to be a little overwhelming to some people because I am so extroverted, and I do like to chit-chat with people, and I don't know, I think I feel sometimes like a, you know, kind of pouncing on them like some tiny little animal. And, you know, you have to be careful. You have to read those cues and understand, you know, if people, you know, maybe not everyone wants to be my friend, and that's okay. But, you know, I think it does help to try and, as Joe said, kind of lend that human aspect to work. I think it makes it so much more enjoyable, too. You know, you can go through the day kind of trudging along, or you can go through the day and take a genuine interest in the people that are around you and what they do, and, you know, what they do when they're at work and what they do when they're at home, and, you know, just try to enjoy life a little bit more.
I mean, and if there's anything I've learned is that everyone's got a story, and no matter how interesting you think you are, the person next to you's got a beat. I mean, people do so many interesting things, and I mean, there's a person who works right across from me. We've been working, facing each other for probably a year and a half or 2 years, and he came out with something the other day, and I was like, whoa. He's like, I used to be sponsored as a Frisbee golf, professional, like, Frisbee golf player.
I
was like, what?
That.
And that never came. That never came up. How could that be?
So I think, Catherine, though, that is back to the questions that we prepared for. I think one of the things that you started to talk about was what happens when you're too much of yourself, and can that be staying true to yourself? How do you balance that with being maybe too much? Because I'm going to put my diversity and inclusion hat on right now. I think everyone needs to bring exactly who they are into the workplace. That's what we're proud of at State Street, that we think that when you walk in the door, you can be who you are, the same person when you walk out the door, and that you don't have to hide any of who you are to be successful at our company. But the balance is you are in a professional workplace, and you want to make sure that you're meeting your goals and meeting the expectations of the workplace. So we had talked a little bit about how do you balance that.
Yeah, it was interesting. We kind of talked about it as being this disruptive force. And, you know, what I was finding was increasingly I was becoming this disruptive force because I'm really outgoing, and I tend to be kind of loud, and I'm very cheerful, and I love life. I think it's just important to have this lovely, you know, positive outlook on life. And it was actually kind of funny, though, because there were a number of people who were telling me, oh, you know, I actually didn't think you were as nice as you really were. I thought you were being kind of fake, and then I got to know you, and it turns out you are this much all the time. I took it as a compliment. I don't know. Maybe it was a thinly veiled insult. I'm not really sure. But I started referring to it, because not everyone was receptive to it, and I started referring to it as Katie versus Catherine syndrome. So Catherine is my given name, and, you know, it's the name I use at work. It's very professional, multi-syllable, et cetera, et cetera. But at home, my parents and my friends and my husband, they call me Katie. And, you know, what I started to find was that Katie was starting to crop up at work more often than maybe a lot of people wanted, whereas they really wanted to deal with Catherine. And so I really had to start paying attention to what I was doing, when I was doing it, and who I was doing it with, and kind of modify my approach so that Katie, who was being far too disruptive, you know, was kind of tempered a little bit, but not gone altogether, because, you know, that was one area that I tried, and it just didn't work. It doesn't work for me. It seems fake because it is fake, and, you know, the friendliness, the cheerfulness, the gregariousness, that's Katie, and it's Catherine. It just needs to be toned down a little bit when it's Catherine.
I want to go back to the nerves comment that I made earlier, because I think we all, whether it be here, at work, at home, at one point you were nervous when you're trying to do something. And for when you get a chance to watch Joe's whole talk, you'll see that he actually got up in front of our whole organization and sang, right? Sang a song.
Yeah, I did.
Talk about being brave. So talk about that nervousness, and it sounds like you're able to overcome it, but still recognize that it's part of who you are.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been nervous. I've always had stage fright. When I was a kid, I remember I was in plays and everything. I remember auditioning, though, and just being like a wreck. And I would get in because, you know, only so many people try out. But
I never got into any plays.
Really? Did you? Well, you know, I don't know. We didn't go to the same school, though. And so as a musician, trying to play songs in front of people and perform and be on stage, I started to go to open mics, and I started to you know, still be nervous. And I don't think that changed. You know, now, if I, I'm still nervous. But what happens is a couple of things happen. One is the more I do it and the more often I do it, the sort of easier it is to just sort of overcome that very quickly and then be a little more comfortable. Also, what used to sort of manifest as a really shaky voice now manifests as sort of an upset stomach. So I feel like I've physiologically pushed those nerves like down into my stomach and then I just don't feel very good, but I can kind of get by. Yeah, but for me, it's a practice. It's an ongoing thing. Like if I'm performing every week or twice a week, and there was a time when I did do that two or three times a week, I felt like I could take on anything. And then if I let a month slip or more, it's almost like I'm starting again. And that's how I am at work. And so even when I was making sort of having minor successes as a musician, I would come to work where I'm really not giving presentations on a regular basis and be right back at square one if I had to talk to five people or two people sometimes. I'd be, you know, just very uncomfortable. So I think it's, for me at least, it's the more you do it, the more you know how to cope with it.
So both Joe and Catherine are marketing professionals at State Street. So one of the questions I wanted them to answer for me so that I could learn was really, what advice do you have? You are clearly self-aware of both your strengths and your weaknesses. I've been in meetings with you now both, so I see how phenomenal you are. And what advice do you have for the rest of us on how do we get to be a place where 2.1 million people or, and more want to listen to what we have to say?
Gosh. I mean, for me, I don't know if, you know, it'll at least get the you know, the office audience, I think, to listen to you and want to pay attention to you. One of the things that I was not doing, and it was a really useful piece of feedback that I got, was to engage in active listening. And I thought it was really fascinating because it was one of those pieces of advice that I got that I was kind of like, I do that, fine, thank you, and just kind of left it at that. And then I started thinking about it. I thought, you know, I'm the type of person, I'll meet you, and you'll say, oh, hi, my name is Sarah. And I'll say, oh, it's so nice to meet you. And then 2 seconds later, I don't remember what your name is. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm a terrible active listener. And so what I started doing is I started saying, okay, I'm going to be more of an active listener in meetings. And I'm going to go in and I'm going to pay attention. I know that sounds so bad, especially since my manager's sitting right there. But I'm going to pay attention to what is going on in meetings. And it was really fascinating to me because I was able to pick up on a lot of both verbal and nonverbal cues that were resulting both from what I was saying and what I was doing, but also from what other people were doing. And there is nothing wrong with learning from other people's mistakes. If you're in a large meeting and, you know, Bill over there goes on some sort of a tirade and the most senior person in the room doesn't respond well to what Bill is saying, I'm not going to do what Bill is doing. I'm going to do something different. So for me, the best thing that I've ever done was really to just try and be a better listener. And it sounds so easy, but it was hard. I was tired after a lot of meetings. And my day seemed so much longer. But I don't know, that really, really worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is fantastic advice. It reminds me a lot of, so one thing that I'm very sensitive to nonverbal cues. I look at everyone, and if they look like they're not feeling something, then I'm just like, this is not working. Abort, abort. So, and as you know, as a performer, that's really tough. And one of the maybe the best advice I ever got was, and this goes for presentations or if you're performing or even potentially even if you're talking to people, but a friend of mine said, you know, your audience has one job, to show up. And if they did that, then they've done their job. So whatever else happens is up to you. And just the way I respond to other people's nonverbal cues, a group of people can easily sense what you're doing. So if you walk out on stage, or if we came up here and we were, you know, nervous like I am, and, or you know, if people feel like you don't know what you're doing, or you're not owning your part, then they don't trust it. Mm-hmm. And whether they mean to, you know, when I go to a concert, if I feel like someone doesn't know his guitar part, I don't like think to myself, oh, I don't trust him. But somewhere, I feel like this isn't going right. And then people start to check out. So, you know, part of it goes both ways, I guess, nonverbal cues and, you know, part of having the confidence and making sure that you can, you know, overcome nerves and tell your story and be confident is knowing your material, whether that's your PowerPoint presentation or your song or whatever, and just really knowing it 100%. That's what instills trust in other people, at least from my experience.
How about some questions from the audience? Does anyone have any questions? Go ahead. Just shout it out. Or go to the mic, actually.
Yeah. Oh, indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't need that mic.
There you go.
I might be an extrovert myself. I am really intrigued with the idea of crafting a story that will help change, inspire, motivate others, help them potentially think about a situation differently. I'd love to hear more about the actual process going from all of these crazy ideas here, and there, and how you actually got it to here, and then submitted it to State Street TED Talk.
Yeah. I'm happy to
start on that if you want, because mine was painstaking, and I know there's some of my colleagues in the room who probably have never seen me cry before, but would regularly then walk into my office and see me just kind of melted onto my desk in this pile of tears, because I went through 64 drafts. It's awful. But I think the most important part is that iteration. And for me, what I found is you find colleagues who are going to give you honest feedback. And that was really the storytelling and the crafting part of it that was really useful to me. I think different people do it differently. But for me, it was pulling in a variety of people and saying, okay, this is what I'm thinking. What do you think? And they were very, very honest with me. Someone would say, you know what, that makes a lot of sense. One young lady who's actually sitting here in the back, she works for me, she said, you know, I think that might get you fired. I wouldn't say that. And it's helpful pieces of feedback like that that you have to get. And so when crafting the story, I think you, number one, just have to realize that you know, you're going to get feedback and you can't take it personally at all. You have to be willing to accept that feedback, and then you just have to really develop just kind of thick skin and the realization that it's never going to be perfect, and you're going to go through all of these different drafts and all of these different changes, and then you're going to get up on stage, you're going to say something completely different from what you wrote down. But guess what? No one knows because no one has your script in front of them, and it works out.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I never saw you crying over your TED Talk. I don't know.
Oh, you mean before or during?
Not publicly, no.
Yeah, no, I did cry a little bit. There was a point where, so about halfway through the process, so we submitted our ideas, then we're working with a coach and crafting, iterating. You know, my thing is that I always like to say everything I write out loud, because invariably you'll say it a little bit differently than it's written. And so, you know, for me, it was like practice in the morning, practice in the shower, practice on the subway, practice, you know, and then every single practice, it's like, this word isn't quite right, replace it, change the, you know, the phrasing or whatever, edit. But at one point, there was like a, what they call the dress rehearsal, but it was just a check-in. And I was so nervous because we were on a video conference and like, I was like in a weird conference room with my guitar and like, I couldn't really see them very well. And you know, they were totally like stone-faced. And I went through this talk and it was just like, it was my worst fear of what that talk would be in real life. It was bad and my timing was off and I couldn't remember it and the order was all messed up. And that's when I cried. But then, you know, that was great because then we went back, we changed the order, we cut things, we moved whole sections around, and that got me in a really good spot. So I think it's important to have that, like what you said, honest feedback, like get to, and don't be afraid to, something I've always said, although I don't always do it, is, you know, it's okay to start over. I always used to say it's okay to start over, but now I'd say it's okay to start over sometimes or to a point. I mean, like if something's not working, even if you've got all the way through it, if it's not working, it's not working. And so for me, if it meant changing whole sections of this talk and cutting whole areas out and rewriting them, I mean, I think that was worth it, you know, rather than just say like, oh, I'll make it work the way it is, but I'll just get better at it. So
I think it's important to remember, too, that it's storytelling, right? It's not memorization. And once you kind of get over that hump, and I think you need to do that with, you know, if you do something like a TED Talk or any sort of speech, or even if you're, you know, you're presenting in, you know, in front of a management committee or in front of a board or in front of your, you know, your team, is if you go in with a script that you feel like you need to read word for word, it's not going to play out well. And but if you're comfortable with the story and you're comfortable with the topic, then it's going to flow a lot better.
Stories. So a big reason why I came to this discussion was because you're all from corporate State Street, and you've utilized storytelling in a really interesting way. And I'm an entrepreneur, and so for me, I'm really curious, how can you utilize storytelling when you're kind of in this big corporation, right? Where how can you use storytelling to really have people get to know you better, where sometimes those conversations don't happen, you want your managers to know you better, and really as part of like almost like leveraging who you are to build like a personal brand, right? So how do you do that in a big company?
Yeah.
I can actually answer that one, even though I'm not supposed to answer the questions. And it's funny, that's the question that we have on here. So there's two ways I can answer. When I talk about working at State Street, there's sort of two ways I can say that. I can say, I've been at State Street for 20 years. And usually you get the, oh, okay, so what's like, ha, huh, what's wrong with you, kind of. But then I tell a different story about how I've been at State Street. And I always say, when we're introducing ourselves, a lot of times people say, I've been at State Street for blah, 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 5 years, 6 years. And I say, I've been at State Street for as long as my daughter has been alive. And I present a little young, so people usually think I have a small child. Well, I've actually been at State Street for 20 years. And what happened was, when I came to State Street, it was new, and it was probably like my third job. As I always say, I was in this place in Quincy, Mass, which I wasn't from Massachusetts, so, and it was the job I was gonna keep until I found my real job, because I decided I wanted to stay in Massachusetts instead of move with my job to New York, and I was gonna stay in Mass, and so I took this job. And so I didn't always feel well those first few weeks at State Street, because I must have been nervous, new job. That had to be it, right? What was it? It was actually that I was pregnant. So as a result of starting off at State Street and being pregnant, I realized after I sort of waddled in through work once in a while and had different things happen to me as being pregnant 20 years ago, very different time, very different company, I sort of said, I'm going to make sure that for every woman who has a child at State Street, this is going to be a good experience for her. She's going to be able to work flexibly. We're going to have programs like backup care, because I wanted to work, but I also wanted to make sure I could care for my child. I also then realized, you know what? There's two people to this baby, isn't there? There's dads, and dads need to be included in that conversation when we talk about childcare. So at every juncture in those 20 years, then I started talking about inclusion and making sure anyone, no matter who you were, they could build the career that we wanted to have. So that all of a sudden, 20 years later, I find myself having a phenomenal experience at a phenomenal company. I have a great story to tell. So when we talk about how do you do that, like, I think you have to figure out what's your passion, what's your story, how do you give a very simple answer, I've worked at State Street for 20 years, into a story around how I've built a career at a great company that has now been the presenting sponsor at this conference for 10 years. These are phenomenal ways to weave in little bits. And I think, I'm not saying I connected with everyone, but I bet I connected with enough people that people will say, I want to explore that a little bit more. And I think that's really the way to get that, to take a fairly, you know, maybe potentially boring answer and turn it into something really interesting.
I'm not going after that.
I have a question around your TED Talk experience. I have a few ideas, and I feel pretty comfortable writing the stories out, and I have people around me that can give me really honest feedback as well, but I'm not sure how to start the process. Are you just submitting online? Do you have someone helping to coach you through the process? What did you do?
Yeah, well, I mean, for us, it was part of our, State Street had a partnership with TED.
Okay.
And so it was just an open call to all employees to submit stories. But I think you can just go on TED.com, and they do have you can submit stories right there.
Okay.
And then I think they review you know, everyone's stories.
I think they review pretty regularly too. Yeah. And I would say, you know, make it as real as possible, right? Like, it was interesting with mine when I submitted it. They talked to me afterwards, and they said there were a couple of areas, particularly the title, they said that you tried to clearly make very catchy, right? Mm. And they said, don't do that. We don't want to see flash or glitter or whatever around there. They said, we just want the core of the story. We said, we thought that was so interesting that there was someone who wanted to get up or felt they needed to get up and defend extroverts. Who needs to defend an extrovert? We're extroverts. We're fine. You know. And they said, we have all these talks on introverts because we need someone to support them. So what I would say is it's very much about the idea. It's not about the pizzazz around the idea. And I actually didn't even give my talk the title. They gave the title to my talk.
Okay.
So I thought that was fascinating. I spent all this time crafting all these fun titles and didn't use any of them.
Awesome.
Classic.
Thank you.
Yes. Good luck.
Brian. Yeah. Shout it out.
I'm in the middle of the road, so I'll just say, so as an introvert who plays as an extrovert, but I'm very, very introverted, are there things that you shared in front of, seriously, all your colleagues and 2 million people that you probably wish you hadn't shared with me?
That's interesting. No, I don't think so. I mean, because I'm actually a shy extrovert. I think I was ready at that point to share, to be honest about my experience. And I think there may have been some things in my first couple of drafts that I might not have shared, and I can't actually remember what they might have been. But I was probably on the fence about a couple of things. But for the most part, that's part of what I want to be able to do is just sort of be open, and I'm not worried about, I mean, don't get me wrong, I hate being embarrassed about things. I don't like to like feel stupid or whatever. I mean, I hate all that, but some part of me wants to be able to accept all those things. Like, say, like, so if I'm embarrassed, I'm embarrassed, you know? So if someone is looking at me differently because of what I'm doing in my life, then they are, and if that makes me uncomfortable, well, that's not the only thing that makes me uncomfortable in the world. So I'll just have to get used to it.
I overshared, but I didn't mean to. I'm not a crying type of person. At my wedding, didn't cry once. I was laughing, kind of having a great time. My husband, bawling. He'd kill me if I said, bawling. It's on the video. You could see it. I mean, it was just like an emotional wreck, like this giant football player, big, big guy, like, you know, and I'm like, someone's marrying me. Like, this is awesome. My parents are in the front row celebrating. And then I was going through the talk, and I'd done this talk, as Joe said, hundreds of times. And I'm up there, middle of the talk, little tear starts coming down.
Yeah, that's true.
I was like, oh no, oh no, oh no, what's happening? Like, my biggest fear up there was, crying never even occurred to me. I thought I was going to fall off the stage, right? Like, or trip over my heels. And all of a sudden, I mean, just pouring tears, and I thought, oh my gosh, this has got to be embarrassing, career suicide, now I'm that woman who's crying, oh my god, like this is horrendous. Turned out that actually it made the talk even more authentic, because I really didn't mean to, and oh my gosh, couldn't believe I cried.
As an extrovert, with storytelling, I want to know, how do you limit ranting? Because I feel as though, no, seriously, I rant all the time, and I wonder how, and I know, like, you could have a plan and, like, you know, all that kind of stuff, but what if you believe your small details make the story? Mm. Because I could go on and on with a story.
Oh, no, me too. I think two things. Like, one, recognize that you rant. For me, I had no idea. I was completely oblivious to the fact that I was ranting, venting, whomping, complaining, whatever you want to describe it as. The other thing you could do, and I've actually asked a number of folks on my team who are with me quite a lot to point this out to me, is I've just said to them, if you see me kind of going back to some naughty behavior, just tell me. I want to know. And I've developed very, very thick skin, and I want useful, helpful commentary, and it's not criticism, right? I want constructive criticism, though. Right. And so I've got people now who have kind of said to me, like, yeah, you were kind of starting to veer into crazy land there, so maybe dial it back a bit.
Right.
And it's so nice because they do it immediately after the meeting, and then I can remember what I was doing and correct for that in the future. Nice. That's the best way you can do it.
Thank you.
Because I don't recognize it myself.
I would just say that, I would just add to that, you know, the storytelling has a dynamic to it, and sometimes, you know, being loud and ranting and being a little mad is okay. I mean, you don't want to, maybe in a business meeting, you don't want to make people uncomfortable or go, you know.
The queen of that.
I guess there's a different, there's some levels of ranting, but I mean, you know, being committed to what you're talking about and being dynamic is, I think, can be important.
I think, you know what, that's a really good point. And it's something, we just had our year-end reviews and my manager told me, he said, you know, I think you do a good job and I want you to do a better job of challenging. And I think that's what it kind of becomes, is it becomes this constructive way of asking questions and challenging and getting your voice heard out there in a meeting. And I think it's really important. Someone said to me once that the worst thing you can do, I think particularly as a woman, is go into a large meeting and come out not having said something, right? You're not a piece of furniture. Your thoughts and your opinions, they do matter. And if you say them in a really constructive way that challenges people, that's hugely important and it's hugely useful. We need people like that in all aspects of business to have really constructive, relevant things to say. So I almost think it's more of challenging the group than venting to the group or ranting to the group. Although sometimes it comes out.
I'd like to ask a question about when you have a presentation that you feel comfortable giving, you've practiced enough, you know what you want to say, you don't even need notes anymore. What if people ask you questions that you might throw you a curveball? And a simple comment, when I was a younger woman and had my son, I was told that he was very introverted, and I got a book called Raising Your Spirited Child, not Raising Your Troubled Child, Raising Your Spirited Child, and I learned that I'm a spirited extrovert while he's a spirited introvert, so there is a huge accommodation one as an extrovert has to make for those who are introverted in our society. Thank you.
Did you want to go for the question?
I forgot the question. I'm sorry.
The question was, what happens when you're asked?
Right. Yeah.
You first have to listen. You first
listen.
I was listening. No, I was hanging on the spirited part. I think for me, you know, I don't give a lot of presentations, as I said, but as a songwriter, and when I do give presentations, the better I know the material, the easier it is for me to get back on track if I'm sidetracked. So if I know the material really well, if I've gone through it, if I've internalized it, then it's much harder to trip me up. If I barely know it or I'm just sort of getting comfortable with it, then any question can totally trip me up. And I think, you know, people get better at that the more of that kind of thing that you do. But yeah. I think the better you know your stuff, the easier it is to break out of it and break back in.
Well, and my favorite response is, I don't have all the answers, but let's talk through it, or let's follow up. Let's have another meeting. But there's nothing wrong, I feel, with saying, you know what, I don't know, but we'll figure it out together. And that's actually my favorite phrase, is let's figure it out together. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that.
So I think we have time for one more question, so that's perfect.
Great, thank you so much. To compliment those who rant, I sometimes feel I'm too brief. I'm the type of person that can come in to a 30-minute training and get it done in 15 minutes, but I also don't feel that's as effective. So I wondered what tips you had to help me kind of fill in those details and tell more stories.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a really fascinating
question. That's a great
question. I like that one. Not an issue that I have, I'm not going to lie, except maybe now in this circumstance. You know, I think for me, every once in a while, I find myself being brief, and it's because I'm not comfortable with either the people in the room or the topic or the situation. I actually am not a confident person. I'm really not. The only thing that gives me confidence is something that my mentor told me, and he's a wonderful man, and he said, you have to have the ability to fail, but you have to have the ability to fail fast and bounce back. And that's the only thing that I'm confident about, or that gives me confidence, is the fact that I can do that and I know people will support me in bouncing back from that failure. I kind of went down a road there.
I think
there.
It's also really important if you think you're too short to ask questions back. So ask people, mm-hmm. do you understand? Is there more you want to hear from me? Like, you know, sort of pull, try to pull from your audience. Because if someone's really interested in what you're saying, people, I actually love brevity. I'm with you. I think sometimes we try to do things. Every meeting is always an hour. No matter what at State Street, you get an hour on your calendar. Mm-hmm. And you think, we're spending an hour for this. This could be done, I'm with you. We could do this in 15 minutes. But if you take the time to be the listener to ask questions, I think that's going to make the conversation so much more interesting, but you also will be able to share so much information back and forth.
I'm also a big fan of crowdsourcing. I mean, again, ask the people who are in your meetings, you know, does this need to be longer? Is there, you know, am I coming off as, you know, too brief, uninformed, anything like that? And get other people's opinions because, you know, as Julie said, people might love your meetings more than anyone else's, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's any number of levels in when you're talking about storytelling. So, you know, my whole TED Talk could have been like, well, I was nervous, so I wrote a song to help deal with it. And that was it. Like, that could have been it. I mean, it was, you know, but instead it's 5 or 6 minutes long. So, you know, I think you figure out who your audience is and what they need to know. And is there something that can give a little more dimension to what you're talking about? And if it needs to be brief, that could be okay. Or if it needs to, if you need to expand it, I think, you know, that depends on your situation.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Well, thank you all so very much. My commercial on State Street is, if you get to work with people like this every day, you can only imagine what the company is like to work for. So you heard Yvonne Garcia and Hannah Grove as well were speakers. It's a phenomenal group of 32,000 people, and I learn something from them every day. So again, I took away a lot from my car ride home to think about. So thank you. And I think there is wine, right? In the and that, to me, would be the best part.
Thank you.